Nightlife with Philip Clark on ABC Radio.
Well, we've all been there. We're online watching a video, maybe just doing your own thing, really. Doesn't take much to scroll down and you see a plethora of really nasty comments. Does it get less shocking each time, or have you become numb to it all, or maybe you just avoid them completely? When you think of an internet troll, you might conjure up images of someone in a hoodie typing away in a dim basement somewhere. Someone with all sorts of maladjustment problems, social problems, and so on. Maybe they've got low self-esteem or anger issues and all of that. Whatever it is, the questions often remain the same. Tonight we're talking about trolling. Who does it? Why do they enjoy making you feel bad? And perhaps these are just the growing pains of the early decades in online life. Are we learning how to moderate and navigate the whole space? Joining us tonight is a leading national expert in cyber psychology and interpersonal relationships, a senior lecturer and researcher of psychology at Federation University Australia. Dr. Avita March joins us. Avita, good to have you, and welcome to Nightlife.
Good evening. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you with us as well in this troll-free zone, although I suppose actually this program, like all others, would be subject to it. When we say trolling, what are we talking about exactly? What exactly is it?
Oh, that's a great and very convoluted question to start with. So let's unpack that. Now, I've been exploring trolling for nearly a decade. And during that time, I've discovered that what I thought the term meant means very different things to very different people, both public and researchers. And I know that that is a convoluted answer, so I'll break it down a little. The term trolling actually has a really long history in the literature, which might surprise some people. It can date back to the 90s. Initially, the term trolling came from the fishing term trawling, which meant to put out a baited line and lure in. In earlier research, the term trolling often referred to two behaviours online. One behaviour was called more kudos trolling, which was a behaviour designed to entertain people. Hmm. It had the overall outcome of amusing both the troll and others. And there was another type of behaviour called flame trolling. This was the more malicious form, where the intent was for the troll to amuse themselves but not others. Now, in around the 2010s, the term got caught on, mostly a lot came up quite popular in the media, and trolling really came to start referring to that second form, a more antisocial online behaviour. Now, fast forward to today, trolling's become a bit of a catch-all for really any kind of antisocial behaviour online, all gets lumped under this term of trolling. Now, what's an important distinction is in my research, how I operationalize trolling is that antisocial form. So when we use the term trolling, we largely refer to an intentional, disruptive, and provocative online behavior where the troll seeks to disrupt and likely upset other people.
Hmm. So it's about deliberately upsetting people, is it?
It is. That intention is really important, and that intention has become a defining characteristic in how we explore these online behaviours. Mm. Because I've been contacted throughout my research by people who say, like, this isn't trolling. Troll is an art form. What you're exploring isn't trolling. So that intention, whether somebody intends to entertain or they intend to harm, has become a hallmark characteristic in how I explore what I've come to term as malicious trolling. Mm.
How is it different to cyberbullying? And this is another expression we hear a lot about. What's cyberbullying? Is that different?
Well, the two terms do seem to be used quite interchangeably.
They do.
Now, in 2019, a colleague and I decided to explore, do people think that they're different? So we asked a general sample, in a community sample, do you think cyberbullying and trolling are different? Just yes or no. And we found that the majority of people said yes. Some said that trolling was a form of cyberbullying, others that they were quite distinctive. But we know that people do seem to classify these two behaviours as different. How they differ, people can be quite unsure. There are some characteristics of the two behaviours. Firstly, cyberbullying by definition is a repetitive behavior. So cyberbullying is a repeated harassment or act of aggression. Mm. Trolling doesn't have to be repeated to be considered trolling. It can be one instance of cyber abuse. We also know that cyberbullies tend to typically bully somebody that they may know in real life, whereas trolling is typically targeted towards people someone doesn't know. But another important characteristic, and what I have attempted to show throughout my body of research, is that there are different psychological characteristics that predict the two behaviors. The psychological profile of the cyber bully is quite different to the psychological profile of the internet troll.
Oh, yeah. How?
Well, okay. Next question. So what I started to explore initially was personality traits. So I was interested in what is rather ominously called the dark tetrad of personality. And the dark tetrad of personality refers to four main personality traits. Mm-hmm. There's narcissism, characterized by egocentricity, grandiosity. There's Machiavellianism, characterized by the tendency to manipulate other people, be strategic, treat other people as an ends to your own means. There's psychopathy, which is essentially being psychopath, so being characterized by high callousness, a lack of personal responsibility, and lower empathy. And there's also sadism, enjoying hurting other people for your own gain. They take enjoyment in causing psychological and physical harm. Now, when exploring cyberbullying and trolling, there's some differentiation in how these traits present in cyberbullies. So cyberbullies have been found to have higher levels, say Machiavellianism and psychopathy, whereas for trolls, I've found pretty good, reliable evidence that trolls repeatedly have higher levels of psychopathy, but also sadism. But perhaps the most important differentiation between cyberbullies and trolls that I've come across is that cyberbullies typically have lower levels of self-esteem. And you mentioned earlier, Philip, that idea of the characteristic troll sitting in the basement, maybe low levels of self-esteem, don't feel good about themselves. And that's certainly a picture the media has helped paint. But when we have explored self-esteem and trolling, we actually find no relation. In fact, we found a very interesting interaction between self-esteem and sadism.
Really? Okay. Tell me, who are they? I mean, is there a typical troll? I mean, they weren't invented by online, were they? They've just, online's an opportunity for them. They presumably were always there, were they?
Look, I'm often asked that, like, what did people do before the internet in terms of trolling? Yeah. And the best I think is maybe prank phone calls, maybe letters to the editor.
Anonymous letters at work, that sort of thing.
None of those capture the intent, that abusive element that we see in trolling now. I mean, they capture that OG prankster, the original prankster, prank phone calls essentially, but none of those behaviors capture the more sadistic element that we see in trolling. But sadism isn't a new characteristic in humankind. Like, we have a long checkered history of being sadistic. We only need to look at like gladiators in the past and see our blood sports. Mm-hmm. So sadism is not a new element. The online platform has just provided people with a new playground to engage in these different behaviors. There is no real typical troll. There's not a prototype. What my research has shown is there are definitely personality traits and other characteristics that seem to be reliable predictors of somebody engaging in this behavior, but there's nothing typical. They're not sitting in their parents' basement, furiously bashing away keyboard.
Aren't they? No. Surely they are.
Unfortunately,
they're sitting in a converted garage at the back of their parents' place. That's where they are.
Or the attic. No,
They've got a screen perched up on a couple of old telephone books. Who uses those things anymore? And they've always had trouble making friends. Yes?
Well, actually, there was one study that found that trolls are even higher on extroversion. So they can be quite assertive and sociable. They're not what we might think.
Is there, okay, you say there's no typical troll, but you say the stereotype of the social introvert misfit is not correct.
I'm saying that it's not an accurate representation.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. And that that's far more complex than perhaps we would think. I think that there's different typologies of trolling. In fact, it's not I think. I have pretty good research to show that there's different typologies. People engage in different types of trolling behaviors, and different characteristics might link to those different types. Who we see engaging in more activist trolling, so trolling others for pro-social behaviors, anti-vax trollings, those personality characteristics, the psychological profile of people who engage in that trolling will be qualitatively different to people who engage in the more malicious form.
The whole opportunity provided by online, of course, is the great opportunity of anonymity. You can be anybody you want to be. Is that the key thing in being a troll and trolling, that cover of anonymity?
Look, anonymity and the exploration of anonymity, I think to start, is not a new exploration in social psychology. For a long time, social psychologists have been interested in how being anonymous in a social environment influences your behavior. And we know that being anonymous can exacerbate different outcomes. For example, the diffusion of responsibility. Mm-hmm. If you are anonymous in a crowd, somebody falls over and hurts themselves, being anonymous means you're more likely to diffuse responsibility of taking care for that person. You will look to others, wait for someone else to do something. So we know that being anonymous can already influence our behavior. A really important other way it influences it that links then to being online is disinhibition, that when you are anonymous, your inhibitions are lowered. You're more likely to be impulsive and engage in behaviours that perhaps you may not do if you were personally identifiable.
Mm-hmm. See, some might say, oh, well, you know, anonymity is just the way of the coward. You know, you aren't prepared to say these things to a person's face. Which is the mark of a coward.
I think that there's an element of truth to that, but I also think it is more complex than that. It certainly makes, and it does seem very cowardly, and yes, they may not engage in that behavior face-to-face. In fact, in some cases, I would bet my hat that they wouldn't engage in that behavior face-to-face. But I don't think it's necessarily just cowardly. It really is linked to the fact that their inhibitions are lowered. They may behave more impulsively and do things that they wouldn't do face-to-face.
Yeah, I read that a quarter of Americans, a quarter of them, well, maybe I shouldn't be surprised here, a quarter of Americans have admitted to engaging in trolling behaviour. So what you're saying is obviously right. I mean, that's a lot of people have engaged in trolling behaviour at some point. Surely not all of us are capable of this, are we?
Well, I mean, I think on one hand, I know already that there are traits that will lead us to perhaps engage in this more. And some people just score higher on these traits. Mm. And I want to actually make a caveat here. These are non-clinical traits. I'm not talking about having a sadistic personality disorder or even an antisocial personality disorder. These are not clinical psychopaths. Everyone has some level of, say, narcissism. Having some narcissism is actually a bit healthy, helps protect the ego, makes us feel good about ourselves. So we all have some level of these, but some people just have it a bit higher than others. And those might be the people who would engage in this. But I think when I started exploring these behaviors, initially, I saw it as a bit of a pathology, like these were outliers. These were some random people who were doing this. Who were they? And I think that those traits help answer that question. But when we look, and I believe that 25% or the quarter of Americans, that's a bit of an outdated number too. I think it's up to nearly a third of people.
Really?
It keeps increasing. So why is it becoming so prevalent? So there's more to this than just the personality. There's something else going on to why more and more people are trolling.
Mm. Yes, I mean, many people have I've puzzled over this and thought, is, you know, have we created this whole new form of abuse and discourse and you know, negative social behavior that's entirely new and created by the internet? Do you think that's true?
Short answer, yes.
Right.
But that comes with a but. We have, but maybe we've been, perhaps more than that, we've been complicit, or perhaps we didn't realize we were creating this. And I think that our creation of this has been largely and can be largely attributed to how we have been dealing with this. For the longest time, the message that we have all had about the trolls is don't feed the trolls. Mm. And I think that although that is intended to have a powerful message, like don't engage with them, just like if you just don't engage, they'll leave you alone, they'll stop, they'll get over it. I do feel, though, that by ignoring it, it's actually allowed the problem to fester. And by festering, it's become more normalized. And that normalization, not that we created it thinking, oh, this will be a great experience, let's do this more online, but by allowing it to grow, and maybe not allowing it, but facilitating its growth through ignoring it, we've reached a problem now, we've reached a level where it's actually become normalized. And now we expect to experience it.
Yeah, it's the more you dive into this, I'm talking with Dr. Ravita March, who's a researcher in online trolling and cyber psychology, and we're trying to unpick the minds of trolls. Trolling is not a tiny behaviour by a tiny number of people, as I said. Well, Dr. March has just indicated that she would think that the modern research suggests that maybe a third of people have engaged in this at some point. Tell us about a study on negative social potency. I mean, if you wanted to get depressed about people, the findings of this study would make you so. Tell us about negative social potency.
And we got to say, Philip, we can't get depressed about people. We got to learn more so we know how to deal with this.
No,
that is the point of the research.
I've got you. I'm just last person out, turn out the lights. But anyway, before we do that, tell us about this study on negative social potency.
Sure. So this is one of the first studies that, actually, I believe this was the first study that was conducted in Australia. We collected a sample, a community sample in Australia, a colleague and I, and explored that rather ominous dark tetrad traits, personality traits that I mentioned
that
before.
That you were mentioning before, yeah. This is narcissism, psychopathy, Machiavellianism, and everyday or just ordinary sadism.
Yes, yes. Excellent memory. So those four traits. Mm. But in addition to those traits, we were also interested in social rewards. So we have two main forms of social rewards, typical and atypical. Now, typical social rewards are more pro-social. I see a little old lady struggling carrying her groceries across the road and I go and I help her carry her groceries and afterwards I feel good about myself.
Yeah.
And that feeling good, it's rewarding. And I think, I'm going to do that again. I'm going to keep helping people. I feel good.
Kindness is its own reward, isn't it?
It is. And it's motivating. And rewards are motivating. I'm motivated to keep doing that behavior and experiencing that same thrill, that little dopamine rush I get from doing that. I like that feeling. I want to keep getting that. Now, the second type of social rewards, atypical social rewards, were also called negative social potency. This time I might, I don't know, see the same little old lady and then I trip her or do something quite awful and she falls over and that made me feel good, creating some sense of mayhem or social mayhem or being antisocial towards others made me feel rewarded and that felt good.
What is now it? Who are these sick that. Puppies? There's quite a few. So in other words, it's the opposite of the kindness rush. This is the rush. This is the rush you get from discomfort, embarrassment, not of yourself, of others, or of even hurting others.
It is. And before we, I guess, judge too quickly on it,
I've judged Evita, but go on.
We've all done this at some point. Maybe a friend fell over or tripped or did something funny and we just had a little giggle. Like, we all have some little level of schadenfreude going on.
That's true. Like, just tell us about schadenfreude for a second, because we've all done that, haven't we? We've all taken some enjoyment at a colleague in work who gets taken down a peg or two.
Yeah, it's enjoyment in the misfortune of others.
That's right.
Yes, exactly. So this, however, this negative social potency is a bit different to that because it has the element of reward in there. Mm-hmm. It's, I'm feeling rewarded by this happening. And a reward is a really important distinction because rewards are motivators. You're motivated to keep getting that same kind of reward. But what's also probably a bit more concerning is rewards can be addictive. That dopamine rush, that's what makes us continuously engage in the behavior to get that same feeling. So we were interested in if negative social potency would predict the likelihood of engaging in trolling. Spoiler alert, it did. Mm. But what was perhaps the most fascinating was it predicted over and above that psychopathy and sadism traits, in that if you were motivated by atypical social rewards, you were extremely likely to troll, beyond if you enjoyed hurting others, beyond if you had high levels of psychopathy. The more you enjoy hurting or creating social mayhem and feel rewarded by it, the more likely you are to troll. And to me, that was especially concerning because rewards can be addictive. And that was the first time it hinted to me trolling could be addictive.
In other words, what you're saying is that people have to do it.
Or the more they do it, the more they want to do it, and they have to do more to achieve the same thrill.
Gee, it's warm. Oh, no. I knew I'd be depressed by this conversation.
it's a rabbit hole.
Dr. Evita, it is a rabbit hole, isn't it? Dr. Evita March is with us. Dr. March is a researcher in cyber psychology, and we're talking about trolling. She's at the Federation University of Australia, where she's a lecturer and researcher in psychology. If you've been trolled, you want to share some observations, you might like to join this conversation. 1-300-800-222, 1-300-800-222, text 0467-922-702. From what you're saying, it's highly important then for the troller that they never found out, because they don't want that kind of confrontation. They want to cause the pain from afar, cost-free, as it were.
Yeah, and see, this is what really presented the issue to me, because based on the results of that study, I also really bought into the dialogue of not feeding the trolls. But I was coming at it from this position of, because they're finding it motivating, like that response will motivate them. They are likely to keep doing this, and not feeding them was because they are looking for that response. Mm. That's what's going to reward them. But now, as I said, like, I feel that that motto, that message that we were building has actually had a bit of a detrimental impact, because it has led to us perhaps ignoring something that really should have had a bit more, you know, thumbing out ages ago than we've gotten to this point.
Mm. Mm. Alan on the text line says, Phil, I wonder whether some of the trolling originates from a real or perceived imbalance of power, the frustration of the impotence of not being able to change something or even have someone listen to them. Does your research suggest that any of that's a factor?
Now, not necessarily the predictors I've looked at, but I'm going to chuck in here the anecdotal evidence. Mm. Whilst I have been exploring this behavior, I have received a lot of communication, a lot of emails, a lot of very interesting emails from people who have explained why they do this, which I just find fascinating on its own. Mm. And what a few people have, a common theme that I have noted in these emails and this correspondence has been disenfranchisement, that they actually feel that they've had a loss of power, a loss of status.
A loss of agency too.
Yes, exactly. A loss of agency. Their life spun out of control. Things have happened to them. They didn't plan for this. And now they're hurting, they're angry. And because of that, they're lashing out. They want to hurt others. Those factors are absolutely where I would like some of this direction of research to go in exploring that disenfranchisement, that loss of agency, and also the dominance orientation. Those who feel or are motivated by more status and power, and when they feel they have lost that, how they respond.
Mm. You've also done a number of studies, because one of the things that comes out of a discussion like this, Savita, is that you think, but, you know, what's happened to people's, you know, to this wonderful thing which binds us as a community, and surely, and that is high levels of empathy. That is empathy, you know, the ability to understand and put yourself in the place of others and understand the circumstances they're in and perhaps feel their pain and empathize, the word we use with them. You've done a number of studies over the years about empathy, haven't you? Are there different types of empathy?
Yes, I actually feel the first step I need to take is, what has been so interesting about this area of research, Philip, is that it has been a bit of a rabbit hole, but also each topic has joined or fed into the next topic. And because it was such an underexplored area, we really didn't know where we were going when we started out. We just thought this, you know, this, let's explore trolling. And empathy actually came to my attention from two factors. The first was that high levels of psychopathy were a really strong predictor of trolling. And high psychopathy is usually characterized by lower levels of empathy. But the second factor was, when we found those results initially, and then there were some more news reports in the media about people who had trolled and why, and many people who were being ousted as trolls were saying, I didn't know that that would hurt them. I didn't know what I was saying was hurtful. I actually stopped and thought, maybe they don't. Maybe they really do lack empathy. Maybe they are unaware. Maybe they have low levels of empathy. That research on psychopathy certainly suggested so. And so a colleague and I decided to test this. Now, we tested empathy as two forms. When we typically think of empathy, and we think of empathy as that really feeling what other people feel, sharing their emotional experience, that's actually a form of empathy called affective empathy, starting with an A, affect. Mm-hmm. So that ability to actually physiologically share someone's emotions and someone's experience, really putting yourself in their shoes emotionally and physically, is an affective form. The other form of empathy, however, is a more analytical form. It's called cognitive empathy. And it's also probably overlapping with emotional intelligence as a construct. Cognitive empathy is the ability to more predict and perceive and analyze emotions, know and understand what will hurt somebody, know that people experience emotions. It's a far more cognitive form. So we explored these two forms of empathy as predictors of engaging in trolling behaviors. Mm-hmm. We found, as predicted, that people who were more likely to troll had lower levels of affective empathy. But again, the results regarding cognitive empathy were quite surprising. So we found cognitive empathy on its own shared no relationship with engagement in trolling. But it did, however, interact with psychopathy, in that if you had high levels of cognitive empathy and high levels of psychopathy, you were more likely to troll. So I'm just going to paint overall the picture that we then saw there. We had people who trolled had higher levels of sadism. They enjoyed causing people harm. People who trolled had lower levels of affective empathy. They were unable to share that emotional experience. And people who trolled had high levels of psychopathy, so they were more callous, lacked personal responsibility for their actions, but they also had high cognitive empathy. They were very good at predicting what would hurt someone. So actually, this suggested to us that when people were saying, I didn't know that that would hurt them, they were perhaps telling a bit of a fib.
With Dr. Avita March, who's a researcher in in cyber psychology. We're talking about trolling. Someone said, how do you spell a troll? T-R-O-L-L, I think. We're talking about internet trolling. And exploring the question, I suppose, which it looks as though Dr. March depressingly agrees with the observation that the internet has made this kind of behaviour worse. It did exist perhaps before, but the opportunity presented by the anonymity and the online nature of it all has made, well, in a way, Evita, it's magnified the thing. I mean, some people used to like shouting at each other, but the opportunities for doing it, I mean, you could shout at people on the bus on the way home, and you could shout on the street corner, but you didn't have much of an audience. With this, you do, don't you? And you can do it anonymously, and you can do it as long and all day if you like. So you're saying this reward that people get from it, this is just an almost unimaginable opportunity for people.
It does. It does. I mean, it's the opportunity. There was a term you used there before, Philip, and I thought it's the affordances. It's what the online environment and the affordances that it has provided.
Yeah.
And that anonymity, and we probably do have to pause and say that anonymity has also afforded some pretty amazing benefits for people as well. We know that that lack of that being disinhibited online actually also facilitates and affords people to talk about mental health, sexuality struggles, and gender issues. We know that there are amazing benefits and social benefits the online environment does provide us. So I don't want to detract from that. But at the same time, it also affords a much darker antisocial side to perhaps manifest. And as you said, these behaviors, you may want to shout at somebody on a bus, but you're inhibited by that social environment you're
in. Yes. Yeah. Yes, exactly. The glorious moderation of the expectations of the community. Are there gender differences here, Evita? Are men more likely to troll than women?
Oh, it's a good question. So two characteristics, gender and age. I've always just included gender and age to just use as controls, but also to explore. Now, I'll start with age because I am often asked about age and it's an easier one to answer. Largely, I find no relationship. Trolls can be of any age. Doesn't really matter. One study, I found that it was a negative predictor in that younger people are engaging in more trolling. But honestly, age just doesn't come to the party often. See,
really? That's interesting because I would have thought the grumpy old man would be right in there.
Ah, people think opposite. They think the young ones are doing it. So, yeah, trolls can be of any age. Now, gender, however, a bit more complex. So a lot of earlier studies that we were doing, gender was usually pretty reliably men were trolling more.
Mm-hmm.
But we did start to find this to actually peter out a little bit. In fact, in one study, we explored trolling specifically on Tinder. And we found that women were just as likely as men to troll other people on Tinder.
Okay. I was going to ask you about that, about platforms, because, I mean, the great elephant is Facebook, I suppose, and increasingly platforms like the newer platforms like TikTok and so on. Is there a favoured platform for scammers? Is it for trollers? To my casual observation, it seems to me that it's Twitter, which seems to be 95% trolling pretty much, and not much else.
Yeah. I don't think that there is a specific. I think that platforms definitely attract different forms of trolling,
mm-hmm.
and there's different norms on different platforms. So I don't think it's that they necessarily favor a platform, but the norms of the platform may attract different trolls. So what's quite interesting, though, is when you look at, say, safety features that have been put in place by different platforms, like Twitter certainly has tried to do the most in that you can mute specific terms and users as well, whereas Facebook, you basically mute and unfollow someone. But I think we definitely do see patterns of different types of trolling behaviors across different platforms. So Facebook, we know, basically don't read the comment section, and particularly link to some news sites. We know that that could be a bit of a trolling cesspool, so let's not go in there.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's other norms and other, not even platforms, but online gaming has its own set of norms of, pardon the language, Philip, but shit talking is very acceptable in online gaming and that form of trolling. So I think that the norms of the context certainly also exacerbate people's behaviours. So people may be attracted to one platform to engage in that behaviour in the first place, but the norms then will amplify it.
Yeah, interesting. But if people lack empathy, can they be taught to gain it?
I say yes. And why I say yes is because empathy is a learned skill. Hmm. Now, I'm emphatic about this, pardon the pun, because I do. Hmm. I talk to quite a few people who don't think that you can't learn empathy. But we actually teach empathy quite often. We teach empathy through emotional coaching. If you're a parent, think about when you've emotionally coached your child through thinking why their sibling might be upset or why do you think that person would be feeling that way. That is empathy training, teaching somebody to adopt and understand the perspective of other people. We do it as simple as if a child is petting a dog too hard. We say, stop, no, do it like this. We demonstrate and model empathy on a day-to-day basis. Now, empathy training, even though perhaps it has not worked out so well for some politicians, does have some good outcomes and can really teach people both empathy in person, but particularly online empathy. So like any kind of training, it has these four steps. Hmm. It starts with a discussion on what empathy is. So why empathy is important? Why do we need empathy? What benefits does empathy give us? One of the greatest benefits of all is the continued survival of our species if we take care of one another. The second step is modeling empathy. So this would be showing somebody, if we're going to model, say, digital empathy, it could be showing somebody a post online and then how you would respond in an empathic way. The third step, practicing empathy. Then people would practice their own responses. The fourth step, feedback. Receive feedback about your practice. What did they do well? What perhaps didn't they do? What could they improve? And then repeating the process. Four steps for teaching really any kind of behavior, but there's really good evidence that that empathy training can improve empathy.
Hmm. 1-300-800-222 is my number. Dr. Avita March is with us, a researcher in online trolling. Mark from Adelaide's on the line. Let's take a call or two. Hi, Mark.
Hello. Just let me turn this. Yep, that's better. Is that better for you?
Yeah, I can hear you. Where you go?
Yeah, I did a degree in psychology a while ago. What I think these people are doing, it's just group behaviour, and they're not responsible for their own actions.
Mm-hmm.
Further, people with low self-esteem, or they see somebody high, tall poppy syndrome again, but they see someone that's doing better than them, and they say, I want to be that person, and therefore they just go after them.
Okay. Avita, I mean, you have discussed some of those, some of these aspects are true, not all of them.
I like what Mark said about the group context, because I was discussing before, Philip, I spoke previously about anonymity and disinhibition, but the other factor that can result from anonymity is de-individuation.
Mm-hmm.
That's when there's a shift of focus away from the self to the group context. And de-individuation increases the likelihood that the group context and the norms of that group would be adopted.
Mm.
So if you're in an environment where trolling behaviors have been established as a group norm, and you are anonymous, this increases the likelihood that you would adopt those group norms. So if I'm online, I'm on Facebook in the comments section, and it's more likely that trolling is more normed behavior there, My experience of being de-individuated means I'm more likely to go with the group behavior than I am with my own individual self-focused behavior.
This is interesting, isn't it? Because this is something I wanted to ask you about as well, and that is in criminology, there's a theory called the broken windows theory, isn't it? Which is that, and this has been used by a number of people running cities, that is mayors and police superintendents running cities. They say, concentrate on little things. If there's lots of broken windows and lots of graffiti, people think this is normal and that encourages it. In other words, everyone thinks, oh, well, that's okay. It's okay to break a window or to vandalise property. And in a sense, the act of trolling is it in a similar space that people, you know, on Twitter, they see that, well, gee, you know, most people here seem to abuse each other. So that's normal. So that's okay for me to do it, even though I normally probably would feel inhibited by it.
A really good way that I like to explain the broken windows theory is if you were walking down the street and, I don't know, you had an ice cream and you unwrapped it and you look around and the street is pristine and clean and there's a couple of bins up ahead on the corner, chances are you're likely to walk up to the bins and put that wrapper in that bin. But if you're walking down the street, you unwrap the same ice cream and that street is filled with litter. There is litter on the ground. It's everywhere. It's in the trees. Who knows? You are far more likely to drop that wrapper on the ground. So our behavior and what we do is influenced by the norms in the environment. The broken windows theory was created to explain why some neighborhoods were more vandalized than others. So the fact that the more graffiti that is in a neighborhood, the more broken windows, the more likely people are to vandalize. So we can extrapolate that idea to the online environment. The more behavior that we see, the norms that are in an environment, the more likely we are to adopt those norms. So let's think of it this way. If you see a post online from somebody, and I don't know, the post might be a bit irritating, but you see that every post underneath or every comment is positive and supportive, you're less likely to perhaps post an antisocial comment. Flip side, if you see posts that are just trolling, or antisocial comments, you're more likely to adopt those norms. And in fact, there was research that also showed that not only are you more likely to adopt the norms if you see that antisocial post, but if you're in a bad mood, you are especially likely to behave badly.
Yeah. All right, 1-300-800-222. Julia wants to know whether trollers hide their trolling from their family, or are they quite open about it? Or for that matter, let's extend it to their friends as well. Do trollers have a badge of courage, you know, amongst themselves and their family or not?
I've seen cases where people have been quote unquote ousted as trolls, and for the most part, like, many people have been surprised. Family, friends have been very surprised. But at the same time, I think that there's what's really quite interesting about this space is that for some people, their online behavior and what they do really could exist separately to who they are offline, in that they may have their own online cohort of people that they even have a group of trolls or a network that they do this with, or they could be a lone wolf in trolling. I think that there would be a number that would be quite maybe not surprised and or even predicted, like, yeah, I can see that they would do that. They would strike me as someone who might troll and behave this way. But more often than not, the cases that we've seen, people are largely surprised and really haven't predicted that that person would engage in that behavior at all.
Yep. All right. What can we do about it? I don't know if there's anything to be done about it. There are constant calls for politicians to, you know, do something. And I know the former government proposed some anti-trolling legislation, although that did seem a bit more like a defamation law too. Is what do you think the best path to go down here is? Or maybe there is no legislative path to go down on. We just need to learn how to behave better.
Well, look, firstly, I will note that the only time the term trolling appeared in that previous anti-trolling bill was just in the title. The bill didn't really address anything about trolling after that. And my understanding is that I don't think the current Labor government is actually even going to pursue that social media anti-trolling bill. And for a number of reasons, I'm not a legal expert, but I mean, it really wasn't necessarily setting out what it intended to do, or even the trolling was really just a term slapped on, and it did not address trolling. But I think any kind of legislation at all, whilst I understand the need for it, the irony is we already have in our criminal code that it is an offence to use a carrier service to menace, harass somebody.
Right. Exactly.
Like, this is already in our criminal code. So it baffles me a little bit why there's legislation continue to be developed around this. We're like, oh, actually, it's already there.
Yeah.
What we probably need to do is take it seriously, because right now there seems to be very little consequence for people who do engage in this behavior.
Yep.
I think moving forward, what we can do is actually have more conversations like this, having continued conversations and people even talking about their experiences, because we need to not ignore it. Much like that message that has been sent of ignoring the trolls, don't pay them attention. I think we need to pay them attention. I think we need to have more conversations about this and really unify the voices in that this is a problem. This is happening a lot and it is affecting people. It's having real impact on people. But perhaps beyond legislation, which to me really just seems to put a Band-Aid on it, it doesn't actually offer or get to the roots of it. It more so is just, it's the symptom, not necessarily the cause. And
okay. All right. Gaz, just we've got time for one last call. G'day, Gaz.
Yeah.
Hi, Gaz.
Hi. How are you going?
Yeah. Not bad.
I just think that at the moment we're living in one of the most bullying, trolling environments that society's ever seen, you know? Like, it's really quite unbelievable what's acceptable to bully other people about personal, you know, choices.
Well, I think you'd probably agree, wouldn't you, Evita, that the opportunity provided by online has created an unparalleled opportunity for bullies.
Yes, and I think the paradox of that, guys, is that the more that we do talk about it, the more we're actually going to see that, whoa, this is a real problem. We're seeing it is really common. And I guess that's just going to be an artifact of having these conversations more so, as it's going to seem that it's really worse. But we have to have these conversations. We will talk about it more because it does have that impact. And I think that one thing that we also probably will have to appreciate given this place and time is that we have just had a pretty massive world changer. I mean, COVID-19 has had significant impact on the world over, but not just offline, like also our online behavior. And I didn't mention this before, but how we what we experience offline directly will impact how we behave online as well. And the strains that COVID-19 have created for people, the frustration, the strain, the impact on mental health, this is going to directly translate into more antisocial online behavior. And that's why legislation is not enough. Where we need to channel our efforts towards is mental health.
Yes. If you're on the receiving end of trolls, what's the best way to deal with it? You say, don't feed them.
Oh, no, see, I think the best way to deal with it at the time is blocking, reporting, muting. So I think one thing particularly younger adults do seem to do is the problem we have also had is that we seem to just think like we will experience this, but you don't have to tolerate it. We can empower people to say, take control of your online experience. You don't have to put up with that. Block somebody, mute them, cultivate the online experience that you want, because the less you see that kind of behavior, the less impact it will have on your mental health, but also the less likely you may engage in it.
Okay.
Because perhaps one of the most disturbing factors of all is what we have also shown in our research, that the best predictor of trolling and cyberbullying is if you have been cyberbullied.
Hannah says, I always report trolls on Twitter. I'm actually really impressed by how proactive that platform, Twitter, is. on removing people from their platform as well. Brent says, yes, if people put as much energy into helping each other as they do slandering and trolling, the human race would almost be perfect by now. Well, I agree with that. Dr. March, it's been terrific to have your time and expertise. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Dr. Ravita March is a cyber psychologist from Federation University there and a researcher.
This is Nightlife with Philip Clark on ABC Radio.